And joining me to do just that, Steve Greenberg of the Chicago Sun-Times. Give him a follow on Twitter, at SL Greenberg. Steve, how are you, sir?
Good. How you doing, Sean?
Doing awesome. Thanks for joining me here. Before I get into any college football talk, how depressed are Bears fans today?
Oh, man. I mean, it's so bad looking. And, you know, now Jay Cutler's hurt. He's been around, I think, 10 years to date and not improved on his fundamental flaws. And, you know, if it's not evident by now that it'll never change, then it really should be. And I think Bears fans are, you know, looked at John Fox as a turnaround guy. He has this great history in year two of taking a huge leap forward. Well, this is year two, and I think the Bears look likelier to, you know, to be selecting at or very near the top of the 2017 draft than they do of making progress. So, yeah, it's a bummer. They're awful.
I'm always curious about this in NFL markets because we're very college football heavy out here in Salt Lake City. I've worked in San Francisco where they don't care about Stanford or Cal even when those teams are good. But when the Bears are bad, do Illinois football fans, do football fans in the Midwest, people around that great city, do they find a college team to take more interest in for that temporary reprieve from a bad Bears football squad?
I would say no. Unfortunately, as somebody who, you know, who writes about college football a lot for the Sun-Times, it is a pro sports market. I think just about all the way, you know, it almost, and I'm talking about Chicago. I'm not talking about the Midwest in general. Of course, you know, you're in Big Ten country and there are lots of college towns that are very important to the football fabric in that region. But if you're talking about Chicago, it's all pro all the time. And, you know, you get down into great apathy, even getting near where University of Illinois is, for example, that fan base. I mean, they don't ever sell out a stadium. Even Lovie Smith's arrival, you know, it sort of came and fizzled a little bit, the excitement already, and Northwestern really has no following to speak of. So I am disappointed by that all the time. I mean, I'm a college-minded kind of guy, but there aren't that many of my kind.
At least there's the Cubs this year for everyone to be excited about, right?
Yes, and I think that, you know, Sox fans, Cardinals fans, and anybody else has some level of excitement about the Cubs because it's just so unusual and interesting. And even if the excitement is, you know, to root against them, there's still huge interest in that story. And needless to say, Cubs fans are beside themselves and you know, you might say set up for an all-time fall, but you know, that's the nature of being a Cubs fan. They could, of course, win it. I would bet the field against, I've been covering the Cubs a lot, covering them on the road and getting a real feel for it. I'm convinced they're the best team, but I'd still bet the field over them, you know, once the playoffs start. I think it's really hard to win three series. You have to pitch so well and get big hits, but they've got a chance, and if they do, I think it's the story of the year in sports, at least in, you know, major American pro sports.
Yeah, no doubt about that. The ending of that curse would be – that's the last great title curse, right? I mean, everyone else has kind of washed theirs out, right?
Yeah, the Sox won, White Sox, that is, and the Red Sox each ended, you know, droughts of something in the neighborhood of 80 to 90 years when they won. And, of course, the Red Sox have won three now, and that's become old hat for them.
Yeah.
The Cubs are it. They go back to 1908, as people know, and they've not been in a World Series since 1945. So, you know, you're going back 71 years since the last time they got out of the National League, which is incredible.
As long as we're on baseball, and I promise we'll get to some college football here, but as long as we're on baseball, the Dodgers Giants little dust up last night, good or bad?
Yeah.
For the game ultimately,
good or bad for the game? I think anything that happens that stokes, you know, a rivalry, at least on the field, is generally good. I mean, I know there's been some violence among those fan bases, and I don't like that. I wouldn't want anything to stoke that, but you know, that's a spirited rivalry, and those are good for baseball. To me, you know, I compare it to the Cubs and Cardinals, which is known as a great rivalry, but it's also kind of warm and cuddly and very friendly rivalry. The fan bases really enjoy each other. Cubs White Sox, on the other hand, and they only play, you know, a couple, four games this year, and they're obviously not competing against each other for championship, is angrier. It just doesn't, it's not played a lot. And so Dodgers, Giants, an interdivision rivalry like that, there aren't many of them where there's such, I think, dislike of the other team. And I think that is felt on the parts of the players too. So I don't have a big problem with it. I don't want to see any stupid fights for, you know, these perceived, slights or whatever. I know that Bumgarner and Puig have a history. Didn't look like Puig did a darn thing to me last night, so I think Bumgarner was being kind of meatheadish. But, you know, star players going at it, something cool about it.
Yeah, I enjoy it. Steve Rainberg's our guest here on ESPN 700, talking all sports, but we'll focus now on some college football. You're riding out there in Big Ten country, as you already mentioned. How good does a team like Utah have to be? What record does a team like Utah have before they really register on the consciousness of college football fans in Big Ten country?
Yeah, it's a good question, because the whole Pac-12 after dark thing, you know, it's always a disadvantage, a disservice to the Pac-12, you know, to not be viewed by much of the country's college football writers and other fans and media and everything. It plays into perception or misperception a lot. And I know that, you know, I can recall when Oregon started getting good in the Joey Harrington years and all those cries of, you know, bias, East Coast bias or whatever. There's some of that. Southern bias, I think, for sure there is in college football. But Utah's kind of a unique case to me, because they are not Pac-12-like when you think of stereotypes of West Coast football. I mean, they're defensive-led, hard-nosed, tough kind of football culture there that I think would fit in great in the Big Ten or the SEC. You know, I think there's high regard for the way Utah plays, and there's nothing, you know, gimmicky about it. And I know they don't have Devontae Booker this year, but you know, when they had that power run game to complement the ridiculous defensive line play and all that, they're a good watch. You know, it's not Pac-12 after dark, except for, remember that game at Oregon last season was incredible.
It was wild, right?
That score, you know, that's what one of the things I tweeted after this Louisville Florida State game was it's the craziest score to me since, you know, Utah at Oregon, which at the time, I'm sure your listeners, their minds were blown. I was listening to it on satellite radio while driving from some game, I don't know, and I was enjoying the heck out of it. But I think Utah's got a good, you know, recognizably respected brand of football, and you know, not maybe household names, but good stuff.
Yeah, it's always tough to get a real gauge on, you know, where Utah sits in the national consciousness, because they're a newcomer to the Pac-12, relative newcomer to the Pac-12, only five seasons deep, and they did some nice things, obviously, with a couple undefeated seasons while they were still in the Mountain West Conference. But
sure.
You know, I've got family in the Midwest and on the East Coast, and it's always kind of a running joke that, yeah, it's Utah football, though. I mean, this is – at family reunions, we talk about Notre Dame. We're not talking about how good the Utes are. It's how bad the Irish are, or how good sometimes the Irish are. So it's just always fun for me to get a gauge on that. And, of course, in this season in college football, in the top 10 right now, we've got some interesting sort of outliers who are now at the party, at least for now. Houston and Louisville are two of the biggest stories in college football, three games deep. Are we going to be talking about both of these teams at the end of the year?
Well, there's a good chance. I mean, Houston has, relatively speaking, you know, a couple of losable games. They have losable road games. But they'll be favored in every game they have from here on out. And, you know, what they did against Oklahoma, I think, was compelling enough to me to you know, sort of prove what some would say the Cougars proved last year, which is that it's you know, they play big league football at the line of scrimmage, and especially on defense. It's you know, you still think back of to Houston teams of whether it's you know, Art Briles' teams or someone's teams are, you know, just scoring ridiculous points and also giving up huge scores, playing that kind of sort of Wild West football. But, you know, they play defense, and Louisville clearly plays defense. I mean, Louisville, I think, is possibly a notch better than Houston, you know, athletically. I mean, they're very impressive. I was at the Florida State at Louisville game two seasons ago when Cardinals went up 21-0. It was a Thursday night game. Jameis Winston in town, and FSU came back and won the game. There was still a real imbalance between the two teams athletically. It was just plain to see. I don't think that's the case anymore. And so Louisville can win that conference. They have to play at Clemson, but they're clearly good enough. It's between now, I think, Louisville and Clemson if the ACC is going to put out a playoff team, and it certainly could be Louisville.
How do you feel about the Pac-12 conference's chances? And I know that there's a lot left, a lot of football left to play, so bear with me on all these really early season questions, of course, but is it Stanford or bust for the Pac-12?
Maybe. It could be. I think that, you know, Peterson at Washington is going to win the Pac-12 eventually. And he's probably going to do it more than once. And he's probably going to establish Washington as a program at the accustomed Stanford, Oregon level or close to it. I don't know if it's still too early, but I do know that Stanford plays, you know, at UCLA Saturday, at Washington the following weekend, later on at Notre Dame, at Oregon. Are they going to win all those games? I don't think so. Maybe, but it would be a big surprise and highly unusual. You know, I'm more often than not, Alabama loses along the way. Ohio State loses along the way. You know, more often than not, the best teams don't go undefeated. And Stanford lost twice last year with a terrific team. I don't know if that's a better team this season than it was last year. It could be. They've got a lot of pieces. Ryan Burns playing quarterback well, obviously McCaffrey, and they play. I mean, they look like the best team in the league, but I just don't see them getting unscathed again, and they'll probably lose twice again is my read. So I don't like the Pac-12 to get to the playoff this year. It might have to be Washington if it's anybody.
Leonard Fournette showed us last year that you can't crown a Heisman Trophy winner three games into a year, but there are guys putting on very, very impressive performances right now. You're a Heisman voter, correct?
Yeah, I am.
Do you think McCaffrey deserved it last year?
You know, I have said that. So first of all, I voted for Deshaun Watson last year.
Okay.
And I since came around and determined that I misspent my vote and I should have voted for McCaffrey. You know, I was really kind of behind Watson for a lot of the season, thought he was the best quarterback, thought he was the biggest reason Clemson got where it got. And so he was this real transformative figure in a program. That scores a lot of points with me, you know, somebody who is of momentous importance to a program as it goes where it hasn't been yet. And, but as I look back at McCaffrey and, you know, what he did, and it's what he did to Iowa, I think in the Rose Bowl, really, that was the Rose Bowl, right? Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
That really sort of made me think, you know, get started thinking, what'd you do? So, I mean, the idea that Lamar Jackson is far in front, alone in front right now, I think is silly. McCaffrey deserves to be right with him, and, you know, I'm quite sure there will be others. I don't think there's any such thing as a meaningful three-game lead in the Heisman race.
I don't think that a primarily defensive player is ever going to win the Heisman Trophy again, but does Jabril Peppers have a chance of being in New York at the end of the year?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think so. It's funny you asked me that because I almost wrote something on that this week. I think he does have a chance. He's returning punts. He's taken one back for a touchdown. So there's this Charles Woodson model. Obviously, he won it at Michigan. And, you know, if they want to take Peppers and give him the ball offensively, which they did in the last game, look good running the football. If they want to write in a package for him offensively, in addition to returning punts, and if he does that at a high level, he's a great defensive player. I mean, I don't know why not. If there has to be a perfect storm kind of combination of things, and maybe Michigan has to win the Big Ten. I don't know. I mean, Woodson played unforgettably well in the Ohio State game at the end of the season, and that had a huge gave him a huge boost in his Heisman win. So, you know, it might take that for Peppers. By that time, Ohio State could be number one by the time they play and all that. So, but yeah, I think he's got a chance. He's one of a kind, you know, looking guy right now in college football.
Who's the best team in college football right now? Alabama has obviously looked very, very impressive, but are they standing alone at the top?
I don't think so. I don't. To me, Ohio State looks really good, and I might lean toward the Buckeyes if they were going to play Alabama, you know, next week on a neutral field. I think I would pick Ohio State. They turned over 16 starters, the most in college football, which would, you know, hold most any program back. But Ohio State is at a level of recruiting that is essentially equal to Alabama's, and, you know, has a level of coaching that I think is essentially equal to Alabama's. And they've played better to me. They look better in their game at Oklahoma than Alabama has yet. I mean, Alabama against USC was crazy good, but giving up all those points to Ole Miss is as the Tide did is a little bit of a red flag. So Ohio State looked incredible against Oklahoma, and I think that, you know, you could argue. I was talking to a friend of mine who covers college football as well, and we were both kind of feeling that if Urban Meyer had played JT Barrett last season at quarterback instead of going to Cardale Jones, they might be working on an attempted three-peat here for the national title. I mean, that Barrett is in a threesome of dual-threat quarterbacks, I think, with Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson, who I already mentioned, who are better than everybody else. Barrett has a chance to win the Heisman or to be in New York, you know, himself. So I kind of lean toward the Buckeyes. That's a long answer, but that's, you know, that's who I would pick at this point. And Louisville has the most impressive win of all. So clearly they're, you know, they're to be reckoned with.
Steve Greenberg for just a couple more minutes here on ESPN 700. Steve, Utah starts their Pac-12 conference play with a USC squad whose season is not going the way that a lot of their fans hoped that it would. An extremely talented team, but some of the narrative is that maybe Clay Helton, an uninspired hire, that he might be in over his head a little bit. There's ugly rumors coming out of that program right now. They've already made a quarterback change for the game this coming Friday. Where do you think the Trojans are right now? Do they have a chance to, I guess, recover from a rough preseason and compete in the Pac-12?
Well, in the Pac-12 South, you know, are they going to have a chance game by game? Sure, I think so. But and they've, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there have been some really tightly contested Utah-USC games.
Correct.
Date.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, sure, I think USC has a chance to get on a little bit of a roll, but I picked them to go 7-5, and now they're 1-2. So it's you know, I don't think there's any chance of USC winning the conference. I do think that it's really important who you hire as coach, and that, you know, the bar ought to be higher there than Clay Helton seemingly, you know, meets. It was a strange hire, frankly, and you know, I don't know. I think that it's a good-looking matchup for the youth. And, you know, you get a – I mean, it's really amazing looking back at how Max Brown was thought of and how it's just not worked out for him. He's going to leave USC never having been the guy, it seems. And, you know, it's Sam Darnold of the kind of quality that USC you'd think – would inherently have at quarterback. I'm not sure he is. So, you know, we'll see, but he can have a tough game against that Utah front. I mean, I know that Kyle Fitz was lost for the season. He's a good player, and that's too bad. But you've got more on that, I think, on that defensive line than maybe, you know, anybody in the league, including Stanford. So it could be a really just rough game for USC's quarterback and passing game.
Looking forward to that coming up on Friday. And, Steve, appreciate you taking the time talking some college football. I wish for your sake people out there would get a little bit more into it, because even in an NFL market, man, it's just such a great game, college football.
I'm with you, Sean. I appreciate it.